Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everybody. Chuck Bonnewell, Julie Hayden. This is the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Truth straight up.
That's right. Hey, giant breaking news for the Colorado Republican Party. The grassroots, thanks to Eric Grossman and Ray Garcia, have saved the party. We'll be talking about that at the bottom of the hour. But first, wanted to start off with one of our favorite guests, Robert Spencer, with Jihad Watch. He's with the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Robert, I know you've got some great new columns out about what's going on with Iran, but we wanted to bring you on, and feel free, go ahead and unmute yourself here now. And if we could get, maybe, because I know Chuck will have some specific questions, but if I could just in general get you to, you know, first we're talking, then we're bombing, then we're talking, then we're bombing. What is sort of your analysis of where things stand and where it might be going?
Well, it's kind of nuts, but it does seem as if the president really, really wants an agreement. And he's trying very hard to get the Iranians to cooperate, but they don't want an agreement because they are hardline fanatics. They just want to fight to the death like Hitler did. And so they will take an agreement if it will help them attain their goals, but they are not interested in any kind of agreement that would attain lasting peace.
Well, I mean, I guess it's easy to criticize, but Trump should have not gotten Netanyahu convinced them to start the war until after the midterms, because the midterms is driving everything. I mean, every time he does anything, then the oil prices skyrocket up, and then the dissatisfaction, inflation goes up. I mean, if he waited till after the midterms, the day after the midterms, and declared war, he would have had plenty of time. But they're just kind of going, well, you're not going to do anything because you're hamstrung by those midterms, because, you know, you could lose the House and the Senate. So I think he really bollocks himself up by putting that. And now the time constraint seems to be, I mean, all he does is threaten, you know, kind of like, well, just do
it. Well, he bombs. They bomb.
I know, but just kind of like, all right, I'll take out your bridge. We'll take him out. Quit telling us what we're going to do. Just do it. Just goddamn do it. He can't get it. I mean, I assume going in, he wanted regime change and thought that people would rise up, but he found out they were slaughtering them quicker than they could rise up. And so now he's trying to get a deal with people who you can't do a deal with. I mean, you know, it's just kind of whatever deal you make, it won't be good 2 hours later. So it's beyond me. And, I assume Israelis and Netanyahu still do want regime change. And I don't know how you get that with, it seems that, you know, if you look at the funeral for the last Khomeini, that, you know, there is still not insignificant support for the Islamic regime. I think it's a minority, but I think it's pretty vicious. How are you going to get a regime change unless you throw somebody's troops, I don't know, Gurkhas. Find some Gurkhas. They haven't done anything for 50 years, and go get some Gurkhas.
I don't know where to find Gurkhas, but I can tell you.
Just go right over to India. They're still very short soldiers. They're great. You can hire them.
Very short soldiers, so maybe I'll sign up.
Yeah, but there you go. You can be a Gurkha.
Yep. Trump, of course, would very hotly deny, and of course, we don't know the real story. It probably won't come out for quite some time, but he has denied that Netanyahu told him to go into the war, and he obediently went into the war. It does look as if there was some very serious immediate threat that he was dealing with, but you're absolutely right, Chuck. It's a very difficult situation because the Iranians think they are just the latest group to fight a 1,400-year jihad against the West. Meanwhile, we got to fight in 2-year cycles. And he started the whole thing with only a year or less than that to go. So, I do think that he likely overestimated the ability of the people to destroy the regime. The Iranian people hate the regime, but they're also kind of the poster children for the dangers of gun control, because the regime has all the guns. And so it doesn't matter if 99% of the people hate them. They're going to stay in power as long as they want, unless there is a ground force that comes and topples them. And nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
What about the Strait of Hormuz? I mean, it does seem to me, and how significant, if at all, is this going to be, that at least they're finding alternate ways around that. I mean, that seemed like that was like one of, pardon the pun, but Iran's Trump cards there. And it seems like the world, to a certain extent, has united against Iran and sort of united in trying to find alternate ways so they don't have to deal with Iran. I mean, is that a fair assessment, or is that even going to make a difference with anything?
Well, it's a fair assessment. That's certainly going on. But as far as I know, the only way around is the long way around, all the way around Africa. And this is why oil prices have gone up so much, because the very easy passage from Asia to Europe is under the control, or has been under the control, of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And they've been using it for their own purposes. And so it's very odd, though, because here again, Trump seems to be so erratic and mercurial, and it's hard to understand what on earth he's really up to. Just the other day, I saw him saying, all right, we're going to take the Strait. I've had enough of these people. They're liars. And a couple of days later, he's saying, oh, well, we're not really going to take the Strait. We don't really need it. Okay, but this is the whole problem, going right down to the core of the problem with this war, and that is oil prices, that he is looking at the Republicans getting absolutely brutally beaten in the midterms if he doesn't have this under control by November.
What about the...
With mail-in ballots and everything else, you got to have it in control by the end of September.
July.
And well into January. Now, what about the nuclear weapons? I mean, he said that was initially his ultimate goal, to remove Iran's ability, to have nuclear weapons. It seems like they've hurt Iran in some ways, but Iran has made it clear, it seems to me, that they're never going to give that up. I mean, what's the state of that? And if you were Trump, I mean, what do you do about it all?
Well, as in all the other situations here, it's murky. It's hard to tell what's going on. It looks as if, and of course Trump said it, and then it was confirmed by the Israelis, confirmed, I think also, if I recall correctly, by the International Atomic Energy Agency, that the Iranian nuclear program had been severely damaged, had been set back for decades. The Iranian nuclear material, or a great deal of it, is buried under tons of rubble. It's not going to be easy for them to restart everything and get it going. The problem is that, well, deceit is a hallmark of the Islamic regime in Tehran. The Shiites are the ones who invented the doctrine of taqiyya, which is well known to Americans now, of religious deception. That comes from the Shia, and it's a Shiite regime in Iran. And so it's no surprise that after years of saying, we don't want a nuclear weapon, now they're saying, well, we actually are going to develop a nuclear weapon. And after saying that this whole thing was off the table, now they're saying they're going to pursue it. And so it could well be that, and I think it's very likely, that their nuclear material, their nuclear program, is in much better shape than we have been led to believe. And so Iran remains an ongoing problem. Really, you know, nobody wants to deal with the regime change, and that's understandable after the disasters in Iraq and Afghanistan. But this regime in Tehran is going to be making war against the United States and against Israel and against the Sunni states of the Middle East for as long as it continues to exist. The only way to stop this and solve this problem is to topple that regime one way or the other.
And how do you do that? Or should we do that?
It's the Gurkhas. That you bring your back to the Gurkhas.
Gurkhas. No, really, there's no. It's very difficult. One thing that's been suggested is to send in the Kurds. The Kurds have been reliable allies of the United States, but that whole situation could also spiral out of control, as wars tend to do.
Right.
And it's Erdogan, who the president of Turkey, who convinced Trump not to involve the Kurds in this, because, of course, Erdogan's been making war on the Kurds for years, wants to incorporate the Kurdish areas of Syria into Turkey. And so he doesn't want to see a force of armed Kurds after treating the Kurds so badly. He could see them very easily turning against him.
What did you think about the one yesterday where it was reported that Trump told Netanyahu, get out of southern Lebanon, get out of Syria. They don't want you there. You're just creating problems. I mean, Netanyahu is not going to get out of either Syria or southern Lebanon. I mean, they got out of southern Lebanon once under a prior prime minister, and it was a disaster. And they're not going to give up the adjacent to the Druze. I mean, just, you know, if you're thinking from Israeli point, oh, yeah, we'll just go away and everything will work out great. No, no, it will not.
Well, it won't, because the jihad against Israel continues, and the Israelis are aware of that, even if Trump seems to have forgotten all about it. And so the Israelis, contrary to what Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens might say, the Israelis don't actually have any territorial designs on Lebanon or Syria. The Druze in southern Syria have actually asked to be made part of Israel. But that's very unlikely, because the political cost would be extremely high for Israel to honor their request. But at the same time, the heights, the Golan Heights and the surrounding areas of southern Syria are absolutely necessary for Israeli security. I was in Israel years ago and had a very pleasant afternoon crossing the Sea of Galilee in a boat. And then we had lunch at this wonderful restaurant on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And the people who I was with pointed up, there were some very high mountains right nearby and steep, you know, steep cliffs going up. And they said, that's the Golan Heights up there. And the Syrians used to stand there with machine guns and fire down on the Israeli farmers.
Oh.
And this is why the Israelis took the Golan Heights. This is why they are in the areas of Syria that they are, and why they are also making sure that Hezbollah is not south of the Litani River in Lebanon, because otherwise then Israeli civilians will be murdered on a regular basis. And this is not going to end. Trump seems to
have bought into what the parties
are telling him, that it's all Israel's fault, and so Israel has to withdraw, and then everything will be okay, and this is just a lie.
Well, I mean, Israeli does have some designs, because they have to, as you just pointed out. You know, if you clear out south of the Litani River, you've basically taken out the Shia population that's there, and Hezbollah's stomping ground, and you want to control that. I mean, if you have any kind of self-preservation, you'll want to control that area, and you'll want to control the Golan Heights and the additional areas there. I mean, it's just, and that's why Trump's kind of going, you know, did you just leave, you know, get out of there? Kind of like, you know, what part of self-preservation don't you get?
Well, I don't think they have to deal with either one in terms of territorial expansion. You've got President Aoun in Lebanon, and he is very much against Hezbollah. He has announced that he's not going to tolerate Hezbollah activity anymore. This is unprecedented for a Lebanese president. They have been under the thumb of Hezbollah for decades. And so it's extraordinary that he's saying that. And he's saying that the Lebanese military is going to clear Hezbollah out from the south and ultimately from the country altogether. So the Israelis,
I don't know anybody believes them.
Well,
I mean, they've been saying that for a long time. I mean, oh, I'm going to clear them out. Oh, yeah. Sure you are. Sure you are. You betcha. You betcha. No problem.
Let me ask you this.
If he could have, he would have a long time ago.
I don't know. I think that it's different. It's a different situation now. Hezbollah is much weaker and the Lebanese military is much stronger. than it was before October 7th. Hezbollah has sustained very serious damage since then, such that now it's actually within the realm of possibility that the Lebanese military could take care of this problem.
What about
people I talk to, the Lebanese military can take care of a traffic stop. So maybe they've all of a sudden changed, but they have their own divisions within the army and everything else.
What about after the midterms? Do you think, I mean, sort of Chuck, to your point too, and where you were saying, you know, the timing was a little bit off here, to put it mildly. Do you, Robert, think once we get through, you know, November, that Trump may change tactics then, declare we won and leave, or say, no, we're going to, I mean, do you see any of that? Or because I just don't see, and otherwise this is just going to kind of keep dragging on. And like you said, another 2-year cycle is going to come up, and then it's going to be J.D. Vance or whoever's problem.
Well, that's not going to be any better, right? If it's Vance. But the thing about it is the midterms will come and go. If the Democrats win a majority, then Trump is going to be distracted by getting impeached again and having to deal with all that and a whole lot more obstruction to his programs in general. And so he's likely to try to just keep the whole thing simmering on the back burner and kick the can down the road for indeed the next president. And that's what I think is very likely to be the case, that the Democrats will take the House and the Senate in large part because of the widespread discontent among the MAGA Republicans over how he has handled this and his very strange and erratic back and forth. We're going to obliterate the civilization. Oh, we're having great talks with these wonderful people. And it just doesn't make any sense.
They're very nice, gentlemanly scum. They're scum.
Well, and I think, Robert, man, on the show over the years, you've long said you can't really negotiate with these people because, as you said, under their religious beliefs, it's totally fine to lie to us.
Yes.
You know, so and in fact, it's sort of like it's their moral obligation to lie to a cop. I mean, so how do you can't negotiate, and particularly when they don't want to give up. The main thing that we want is the main thing they don't want to give up.
And even worse, when they want to negotiate, it's the worst time for negotiations, because Islamic law, which the Islamic Republic of Iran follows, says you don't make a deal with non-Muslims unless you're losing and you need time to gather your strength to fight again more effectively. So when they say, yeah, we'll talk, that's when you should say, okay, step up the bombing. And instead, Trump says, oh, great, let's talk, because he's the great deal maker.
Oh, well, and it goes back to, as we've had many conversations with you about, there is, I think, all things considered, sort of a fundamental lack of understanding the people on the other side of the table, do you think?
Yep. Well, I couldn't agree more. Look, that's what I'm all about. I'm an old man now, and I've been doing this for 100 years. And one thing that I keep saying is that because nobody in Washington knows anything about Islam or cares or realizes that it's important, our foreign policy is based on a whole lot of false assumptions and wrong notions. And so we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. I've said that thousands of times, and now it's 1,001. And this is just another example of it, that these negotiations will never work. I've explained this 1,000 times. Nobody in the Trump administration cares. If they know about Spencer at all, they don't take him seriously. And yet I am right about this and everything else. Thank you very much.
Just like Chuck. Well, and then what'll happen is, even if he learns, then a new president will come along. There'll be all these new people, and you're going to have to send him copies of all your old columns and say.
The very nature of treaties is they don't last. I mean, they only last as long as it's in the best interest of one or both of them, to continue it. And, you know, the Stalin-Hitler pack, or Ribbentrop-Molotov track, you know. Yeah, that's a treaty, sure, until Germany invaded. And if Germany hadn't invaded in 1941, Russia would have invaded in 1943. I mean, it's the nature of treaties to be broken. I mean, it's just, you know, our treaties with the Indians go, we broke it. No kidding. You know, and how about the Indians? They broke it. No kidding. I mean,
Well, that's all very well, but it's just all the more reason not to make a deal with these people.
Right.
And Trump thinks of the whole world in terms of we can do business, we can make a deal, because that's how he became a billionaire. And that's great. I ain't no billionaire. I'm sure he's much smarter than I am, but he's wrong about this. If he thinks that they're going to give up things that they believe come from God, that they're going to, it's like if I said to you, if you're a Christian and you believe in the Ten Commandments, and I say, hey, will you give up three of those commandments, please? And I'll give you $5 million. You would say, no, that comes from God. I can't give that up. That's beyond the realm of negotiation. And that's how the Islamic Republic of Iran thinks of its war with America. It's not negotiable. It comes from Allah. Allah told them to make war on the infidels, and they're doing it. And so they're never going to negotiate that away.
Well, I think Trump says, could you pretend till after the midterms?
Yeah. Just pretend. We're like, yes, that's why you take over the Strait of Hormuz. It seems to me that there is not very much, given, as you said, that you can't make a deal with people who don't want to make a deal, and they want to just kill you and destroy you. So you either won and have to just sort of like declare victory and say, okay, we won. Yay, that was fun. And now we all go home and then live to deal with Iran's continued threats another day. Or you have to like destroy them. But I think that's a pretty risky.
Well, we've been trying to do that.
But I don't see how you do that either. What do you see, Robert?
Well, in terms of regime change, it's become this bad word. As if, oh, that's the worst thing in the world you can do. And that's because the United States got involved in a lot of stupid misadventures, the stupidest being Iraq and Afghanistan. And I was right out there at the beginning saying they were stupid. I wrote a book called Who Lost Afghanistan, explaining why the whole thing was wrongly conceived, wrongly executed, and wrongly concluded. And they were sold to the American people on the basis of the idea that the Afghans and the Iraqis wanted democracy. They hated the regimes, and so they would welcome us as liberators. It was not true. It was never true. I warned against it at the time because they wanted Sharia. They wanted Islamic law. And so in Iraq, they got Islamic law. They got the Shiites in Baghdad. And then the Sunnis refused to accept the Shiites in Baghdad, and so they started ISIS and these other jihad groups in the northern part of the country. And in Syria, they got the jihadis, they got Sharia now with Ahmad al-Sharia, who Trump loves for some reason. And so you got all that. In Iraq, you've got that. In Afghanistan, you've got the Taliban that we toppled. And 20 years later, we leave and the Taliban comes back because people wanted the Taliban. They want Islamic law. They think it's the law of Allah that's better than any human law. And they think of any law that comes from a parliament or a constitution as a human law. Okay, what's different about Iran? Iran has had Sharia for 47 years. They're not aching for Sharia. They hate it. They've suffered under it. They know what it's like now. And they remember what it was like under the secular regime of the Shah, and they want that back. So I suspect that if there were somehow a way to topple this regime, then you would not see what you saw in Iraq and Afghanistan. You would see a Western-style secular republic after the manner of what Iran was, although it was not a republic, but it was certainly Western-style secular before 1979.
But you would have to take out, when you say topple the regime, it's way right now because of the military there. I mean, it's not like we can just go in and like kidnap, you know, the leader or something like that and bring him back here. Right. I mean, it's more complicated. You'd have to take out their military, basically. Right.
Yeah, because actually they killed the leader.
Right.
And I think Trump probably was hoping that the people would rise up and that would be the end of the Islamic Republic. And it's actually kind of a weird comic opera situation now because they have this new supreme leader who's the son of the old supreme leader, and nobody's seen him. He hasn't made a single public appearance since he became supreme leader. And it was even, I mean, I still can't believe they did this. I thought, this has got to be some kind of a joke. This has got to be the Babylon Bee here. But actually had a ceremony to celebrate that he's the new supreme leader and held up a cardboard cutout of him.
It's not safer that way.
Cardboard cutout.
But the Israelis blew that up. I mean, you know.
Well, the story is that he was probably severely injured and disfigured in the strike that killed his father, or I think he may be dead, and they are not announcing that he's dead because the regime has already been weakened and the people already hate it, and so they want to still have the specter of this guy gives their regime a little bit more legitimacy. But you're right, there's a whole lot of underlings, a whole lot of people who believe in Islamic rule who are still running things over there, whether Mujtaba Khamenei is alive or dead.
Well, and that makes it even harder to do negotiations that they don't want to negotiate, because whoever you're negotiating with, I would imagine that probably changes. Well, we've already seen that, right? Where somebody says, okay, they agreed to it, and they're like, oh, sorry about that. Those other guys, we didn't tell. I mean, they bombed everything, you know, they weren't part of the deal. So, well, do you think, it's a huge quagmire, I think. And, I think from listening
to the question could you kind of decide, let's just continue and just don't put it on the front pages.
Yeah.
just bomb them every once in a while.
Well, the media wants any news that makes Trump look bad. So
right.
You've got to deal with that too.
I mean, it's just kind of like, okay, it's endless war. It's
maybe it'll turn into like Ukraine. People get tired of it. Anyway. People be like, are we still at war with them? Oh, hey, well, listen, Robert, thank you.
As always,
I always like to ask you this because I know people ask me, where can people find you and read you and keep up to speed with all your latest columns?
Yeah, I got a website, jihadwatch.org, that is updated daily with jihad news, and my columns are there, and at frontpagemagazine.com and PJ Media, and I have a new book out called The Tragedy of Islam, Failure and Excuses, available now wherever fine books are sold.
All right.
Sir, thank you very much.
All right,
appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Thank you. Always good to talk to you folks.
Yep. Robert Spencer there with Jihad Watch. His books are always great too. So we highly recommend. And I checked. It's like he said. He's like, he was like, I was right then. I'm right now. It's like
the trouble is you're always right, but it never helps you.
Hey. So to switch over then to Colorado Republican Party news. So I may have to. Tiger is literally like eating Rev's homework in the background here. She's eating his workout schedule. I'm not sure. So I may have to go rescue that during a second, Chuck. But so Greta Horn, before she resigned in disgrace, one of the things she did is she handed Steve Klenda, they tricked a judge into giving Steve Klenda essentially all of the money.
This is a day before she quit, like a day or two before she quit.
Yeah, right.
And went in there and said, no, there's no dispute about this. We admit we owed it, and we're all accomplice men. There's nothing wrong here. And the judge said, okay, great, you're all agreeing to it.
Awarded Steve Klenda $231,000 and promptly then subsequently essentially froze the party's bank accounts in anticipation of giving it all over to Klenda, completely eliminating the party's ability to raise money, spend money, if they could raise any. Rhinos and the new chair sort of twiddled their thumbs about this and said, oh, well, I guess I don't know if we could do anything. Thank God for Ray Garcia, grassroots warrior, and then Vice Chair Eric Grossman, who launched a legal battle to try to save the party. And lo and behold, it worked. So yesterday, the judge in the case handed down an order, this order right here, granting a motion for post-trial relief and vacating the judgment. The judge basically acknowledged what Eric and Ray pointed out, and that is that while Greta Horn was saying, oh, yeah, we owe Klenda all this money, they left out the fact that there were substantial disputes over that in Ray's lawsuit. They left out the fact that Ray had filed a whole separate lawsuit, that there was a whole other judge dealing with all of this. They left out the fact that there were questions about whether the party owed Klenda anything, let alone $231,000. And the judge said that he found what they called, irregularities. Irregularities affecting issues necessary to the entry of judgment, and therefore he vacated the judgment, which means the party now has access to its bank accounts. Now, they still have to continue the dispute in terms of, you know, what do we owe?
See, that's the whole problem. I mean, so, you know, the gravamen of this, of the thing against Clinton is multi-pronged. But one of the key ones is everybody's claimed, and I think it's been demonstrated, but not conclusively proved to date, but getting close, that basically what Clinton did was he represented Britta Horn and all the litigation that was brought against her by the party before.
Which she tried to do a coup when they tried to overthrow Dave Williams.
Yeah.
And pretended that they were the Republican Party.
Yeah, right, right. And he had about $90,000 of billing. And when he came over, when Britta became chair, she just said, great. Just bill the party. You know, you don't have to tell anybody. Just take all my bills, and which is fraud. And so whatever the amount is, $230,000, plus he's already been get paid $40,000, was a fraudulent misbilling by a conspiracy by Britta Horn and Clinda. And that's just sort of the beginning. I mean, Clinda was also fired. But you just don't go and say, okay, well, if the judge says, yeah, you tried to defraud everybody, but that was really Britta's bill. You know, there are all kinds of punitive damages and other claims you can make. Here's our real problem. We've got a fairly dense chair. And Craig Steiner has come up with this phrase that he said, I don't think Republicans should sue Republicans. So because of that, he directs whatever attorneys you have out there, no, don't sue them, just let's negotiate. And you kind of go, you can't negotiate. They just raped your child. You can't go, oh, let's see if the kid's okay. They stole, and it appears that Steiner will do nothing about it. Nothing.
Well, he did do nothing about it. He did literally nothing about
well,
now, it.
And, now, yeah, he's got to bring cross claims and counterclaims against Clinda. I don't think he will.
And, well, let me get to that in a second.
Stuck and mired and say, well, is this line good? You know, did you actually work on this? Did you? They will manage to bullocks an enormous court victory given to him by the judge and just say, no, we can't sue other Republicans, even when they kill your dog. I mean, it's just so pathetic.
Well, and again, it's like he did nothing. Thank God, again, because if Eric and Ray hadn't intervened and filed some legal motions, we'd still be in this situation, right? And we'd still owe Clinda all of this money. And so now, thank God, we don't. And the judge made it pretty clear. The judge also said, hey, and by the way, I think that this case should all go back to the other judge who knows a whole lot more about it than me and who's handling all of these other issues.
So the question is, Well, Steiner managed to screw up a total gift given to him in which the party owes nothing to Clinda and Clinda owes it money. Because while it's happy to have Clinda sue us, we can't sue him and Britta and Tech back. Because why? Well, because we don't sue other Republicans.
Yeah, the fact that the other Republicans stole all of your money, conspired to steal all of your money, conspired really, literally to just
burnt your house down.
To destroy the party, yeah, it's like, well, we don't want to sue them. Now, and I think you're right. That becomes a crucial next step, and that's what one of the things I wanted to kind of get into now. So first, acknowledge Ray and Eric for this great victory, and thank God for them. Otherwise, the Colorado Republican Party would be
to Piggott, who was the attorney that got to quit, who filed the rule.
Yeah, it was Piggott. This is all Piggott's strategy, right? That he was the lawyer that was helping Ray, essentially, and Eric. Fires.
Yeah, he was doing that too. Yeah. But he's done, you know, and so Steiner got rid of him, brilliant, and now has a team who he won't tell us who it is. He says, well, I can't really tell you.
And here's my concern is that, and we talked about this a little bit with Eric Grossman, the vice chair on Monday when he was saying who really controls the Colorado Republican Party, and not just Colorado, but other parties in the state. And it is the big money interests with the RNC. This would be my guess, is that the RNC is saying to Craig Steiner, hey, you do whatever we tell you, whether it's good for Colorado or not good for Colorado. You do whatever we tell you. You do whatever our donors tell you. You do whatever our rhino congressional people tell you to do, and we will help you pay Clenda off. And my concern
especially when Clenda is owed no money and owes you money.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's a bad, I mean, you should talk to Trump about the art of the deal, right? I mean, if we think dealing with Iran, it's like we've got Clenda over the barrel now. And I think we can get into the whole ethical investigation.
Absolutely have Clenda over the barrel.
Why would we want to give him any money? But that's my concern, is that that's what Steiner's going to do. He's going to say,
and then we'll go, yay, we got rid of the Clenda suit by paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we don't have anything for the election, but don't worry about it.
But at least we're all unified.
The stupidity of the Republican Party.
And not only that, but then again, he's beholden once again to the RNC or the rich donors who are behind the RNC. And that's just back up. I mean, you know, the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle had a great editorial talking about, keep in mind that these are the people who want the jungle primary, that they don't want voters choosing candidates anymore. They want the rich millionaires and billionaires choosing the candidates. And that's what, when you get right down to it, that this is all about. And this is a further attempt to sort of squash grassroots and Colorado Republican voters. And I think, you know, Craig Steiner, if he had any guts, would turn around and say, hey, we've got Clenda over a barrel now. No, we're not going to pay him off. We're going to go ahead and sue him. We're going to call for an ethical investigation, which is already going on, actually, into him. And we're going to make sure this never, ever happens again. But I think you're right. I think he's going to, I fear.
You can just feel it. You know, he's been given an absolute green light to destroy Clenda. And he'll figure out some way, as the establishment always does, to screw it up and not go after Britta. Because you can't say, you know, we can't go after Britta. What are you talking about? She conspired with it to transfer debts that were not yours and to you. What do you mean you're not going to pursue it? Well, it could be proven to me. It is proven. It takes no
Yeah, here's the thing. It would be proven in discovery, right? It would be proven or disproven in discovery. If this would actually, it would pursue the case, we could actually get Clenda's bills and see, okay, wait, how could you have had, $90,000, the exact amount of money that British bills were on the first day you were hired? What did you do? You hadn't done anything, right? Yeah. And so, but I think, again, it's concerning just, you know, who is controlling the party. Craig clearly, I think, if depending on how he handles this, isn't. Right. He just wants to get out the vote thing and make friends and people in Washington, D.C. so he can sell that around the country. You know, and in the meantime, like I said, you can't drop this. What, Chuck, then sort of our next steps? You're the lawyer here. How would, if you had your magic lawyer wand, what would you do?
I combine the two cases, ask the court to set it up so it would be. Clenda is suing the party for $235 million plus interest and everything else.
$31,000.
Yeah. The party, in turn, is suing Clenda, Britta, and Tech for fraud, theft, agreeing with Clenda to rape the party to cover over her bills. And those would be counter claims and cross claims. And have a trial, and all you have to do is do that. Just set it up like that, and Clenda will fold and go away tomorrow. He'll just disappear. Sue him for about $500,000, and he'll go away. But instead, he'll kind of go, well, you know, he has
just give him a bunch of money. Let's give him a bunch of money for, well, and I mean, ethically, this has to be concerning to Clenda too, because the judge is essentially saying in this order here, it's like, hey, you guys clearly, you misled me. You intentionally, deliberately misled me. Yes. Now that's got to be some sort of ethical.
But you know, he'll kind of go, oh, let's not do that. Let's go line by line on his bills for a year and see if he did any work. We don't care if he did any work. He tried to steal all your money.
Well, and I would go back to,
the gardener
once again,
broke in, stole your car. You kind of go, well, okay, I got your bill here for $50. Do I want to pay it? I mean,
well, and it's, and again, I think you need to do this to continue the fundraising. Why would you want to contribute to a party that is willing to fold if they do fold? Hopefully they won't. Hopefully they won't.
But they will.
If the party is willing to fold, and if the party is, well, I mean, if this is what they're going to do with your money, why would you give them your money?
Anything. Anything. Why would you give them a penny? They'll squander it. They will totally squander it. They'll pay the expenses of Britta's officers off. I mean, they'll do every dumb thing you can imagine.
Right. Well, and Craig
Republican Party is the party of the dumb.
Put out sort of a milquetoast saying, yay, we had a good month in June or July. We've got a bunch of candidates.
Thank God for people we fired and got rid of.
Yeah. And it says, and by the way, we have access to our bank account then. That's good news. Never once giving any credit to the grassroots who he pretended to be, right? Never giving any credit to Eric or Ray or the lawyers we fired, like you said. Just sort of saying, like, somehow magically, this all happened, right? It's like...
It's a pathetic party, and now, I mean, you've got a total fraud as our candidate for governor, who I'm voting for because it'd be better than Phil Weiser. But I mean, you have nothing. It's just so sad. But there's always another day.
There's another day. Hey, we'll talk about something that's cheerful. That Plattner guy, Jacob, is just saying, where is Ted Trimpa on Plattner? We haven't talked to Ted Trimpa. He's a Democrat strategist friend of ours in a long time. My guess would be that he's glad Plattner's gone and was somewhat horrified that he was even in there. Ted is a pretty, I think he's, I would call him moderate. I mean, he might, we'll have to get him on.
More on the business side of the Democratic Party.
Right. I'm guessing that he's not favoring the socialists. He's not a socialist.
No, he's not a DSA guy.
No. And plus, he's gone now. So Plattner's old news. They forced him out kind of like, it's a similar thing, just like Biden. It's like, okay, they all knew he had problems. And until it looked like it was going to hurt him, they were fine with those problems. You know, it's like, you know, we've talked about that before in the show. If you're Brett Kavanaugh, you can totally make stuff up and make all these claims up. And, oh, he can't do anything. We have to attack him. And you can have all the proof on the other side if somebody's a Democrat. And they're like, oh, no, he's fine. That was then. This is now. He said he's sorry. But then he starts losing the polls, and then you're like, oh no, he must go. So that's how the Democrats do things here.
Amazing stuff.
I know. Well, anything else you had on your mind today?
Oh, you know, just the Republican stuff. I mean, I just got the greatest victory in the world in that order, thanks to Pigott, the lawyer they got rid of. And now they're going to squander it. So, oh well.
Well, hopefully they won't.
I just want to say one thing. When Plattner was deciding whether or not to withdraw, he said something interesting. He says, we're going to be taken, you know, the money will be taken away from us, and the voter information is going to be taken away from us. Who would take voter information away from a candidate?
Party.
That's public information.
Oh, well, it depends on what they need. A lot of times, and that's like Steiner sort of get out the vote, right? The party pays for, I don't know what the right word would be, software that helps you target your voters and issues. So I'm imagining what they're saying. I imagine why he's mad is that his campaign probably paid for that. And now the party's going to force him to hand it over to whoever the new candidate is.
It's purchased. It's his. It takes. Our Secretary of State says, no, you can't have a list. The list is public information.
Exactly. Well, maybe, and then they'll send Jenna Griswold to investigate it, and she'll say, oh, it's good.
As it, the new AG.
The new AG, yeah.
All right.
Hey, thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, Jacob.
All right. Hey, and that will do it for us. Thank you to Robert Spencer, who's great as always. And we will see everybody next week.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.